phone to record first. Okay, for the time being. Oh, you got the recorder, huh? Okay. Yeah. No, never mind. It's okay. No, after Hui Yong should arrive. Huh? So this one is the first part. I think they can join it up. Huh? Yeah, today is Surija. Yeah, correct. So a lot of them are caught in the jam. Well, luckily, Tammy also got a recorder. Huh? Okay, thank you. Sadhu. Okay. So today we got standby recorder, luckily. So thank you so much for the standby recorder, Jinhao and Tammy. So just for the recording, today is Tuesday. First of October 2019. So it's Tuesday class. We are having it at my SS2 house. So we were off the light so that you can have half an hour of silent inner awareness meditation. Just relax body and mind completely. So since most of you have the spiritual faculties developed already, so you just relax, maintain awareness. Then your mind will slow down and settle down until it becomes very quiet. So the slowing down of the whatever thinking or sankhara will happen by itself. Then you just maintain awareness and don't do anything because your sati is already there. So what you need is just allow the sankhara to oscillate and slow down. When you don't give it any more thought energy, when you don't try to do anything, this mind will silence itself. Then you will realize the silent mind, which is your awareness. Without thought, you are already aware. That's why the meditative mind is a silent mind. You need to stabilize this mind. Try to relax into whatever mind state that arises. Then don't try to know, don't try to do anything, just relax, maintain awareness, and allow the mind to settle down. So you can continue with your meditation. Most of you, I think by now, you can really go into the meditation straight away. You don't need any object of meditation or whatever skillful means to help you stabilize your mindfulness. But you still need to do it, no harm. Just go to your object of meditation, relax into it, silent everything, then maintain awareness of the object of meditation. You are doing anapanasati, just continue to let the anapanasati develop. The purpose of anapanasati is just to anchor your mind to the breathing so that your mind is just aware of the in and out breath. That is what anapanasati is all about. Anapana is the in and out breath. Sati is mindfulness. So anapanasati is mindfulness of the in and out breath. That's it. Very simple. So if you use the object of meditation, then the purpose and function is to anchor your mind so that you can be mindful of your object of meditation. And when you are mindful, you cannot think. That's why the mind will become very quiet, very calm, very tranquil. So you continue to relax into whatever mind state that arises. Then allow the anapanasati to be very stable. The more relaxed you are, the more refined your anapanasati is. Then finally, this anapanasati will slow down. Initially, you may develop the long breath, long breath means the breathing is very long. In and out breath, sometimes it may last for 30-40 seconds. Then sometimes later on as you develop it, as you become more skillful, every in-breath can be 1 minute or so. And every out-breath is also almost a minute. It depends. But when you are able to do that, the continuity of mindfulness will make you very calm, very peaceful, and you will experience piti. Then you relax into it, it becomes sukhang, bliss. Piti is just a spiritual calmness. Spiritual calmness or spiritual joy. Sometimes if they experience it for the first time, they feel like the mind is in a state of rapture. Rapture, which is very nice feeling. Then later on when you experience sukhang, it's really blissful. The mind is so blissful. The whole body also engulfed by the bliss. But don't attach to it. Just allow it to be. Then it will come to pass. Then later on your breath becomes slower, slower and slower until you hardly breathe. You reach the stage of subtle breathing or completely almost no breathing. So when you are able to do until that state, that is a good sign. It means you are able to develop the continuity of mindfulness until your mind is very quiet, very still. Then you just silent everything, don't do other things, stay at the silent, subtle breathing there. If you continue to maintain awareness, then the mind will somehow enter sati. Then when the mind enters sati, you become very sensitive. Your mindfulness become very sensitive. Then whatever subtle breathing is like become prominent to you again. Like you can be mindful of that short breath or subtle breathing. Very subtle. Which means whatever movement, even when the movement is very subtle, very small, your mindfulness is so refined you can feel it. Then it's like a continuous thing, continuity of mindfulness. Then this mind becomes very different. Wherever you locate this mind, it can be aware. If you stay at the heart, then it can be aware of the heartbeat. It can be aware of whatever vibration that is there. You can try it later on. But stabilize it at the anapanasati first. Then later only move it. You will also experience a type of ability where this mindfulness, because it's so sensitive, any slightest movement of your body activity, like you want to straighten your backbone, or you want to move any part of your hand or adjust any part of your body, or even try to keep your back erect. When your mind enters the sati, you will be able to be with that movement. That is like magnified. Whatever movement is like magnified. Then during that time when you can have continuity of mindfulness, you hardly feel any pain. If you know how to relax and maintain awareness, that awareness will actually make you very calm, very peaceful, very still, very tranquil. Then during that time, you can meditate very easily. The spiritual faculties are all there. Sada, virya, sati, samadhi. When you stabilize it, it becomes samadhi. Then that mind is a meditative mind. That mind can understand many things. That's why you can develop wisdom. That's how you train your mind. So either or, if your spiritual faculty is there, you technically don't need the object of meditation. You just relax, maintain awareness, then the mind become very quiet. Even if you got sankhara activity or thinking, because in the midst of life, during your daily life, you may not be stable in your daily mindfulness yet. So when you sit, there is still some carried over sankhara activity or mental thinking. Never mind, just relax, silent, maintain awareness. The thinking will slow down. You have to realize this, then very easy to meditate. In future, you just relax, silent, maintain awareness. Then all this thinking will slow down until there is no thinking. Then you will experience a type of tranquility or stillness. The mind becomes very quiet. So that is the beginning of sati. Then you have to stabilize that mind state until it becomes very stable. Until there is no movement of thought. Until finally there is only awareness. That's it. Then the awareness can be aware of whatever thing that arises. Then later on, after your mind has entered sati, you can try to move your silent mind down to your heart area. Just center of the heart area, relax, silent, and maintain awareness. You can detect your heartbeat or any vibration there. You just silent, relax, aware, and stay with that heartbeat or movement. Initially, the heartbeat is like very loud. It's like pounding. But when you have the skill to be with it, when you are able to stay with that pulsation of your heartbeat or vibration within your heartbeat, it will slowly slow down. Whereas you are aware, your mind becomes more quiet. And it will condition your bodily activity also to become very quiet, very still. Until finally the heartbeat become like very subtle too. Until there is hardly any heartbeat. But actually the heartbeat is there. But it has become very subtle. Then you stay there. That will stabilize your sati until it's samadhi. Then during that time, you just silence everything and let things be. Then maintain mindfulness. And this silent mind, which is the meditative mind, will understand things. Whatever happens within your former mind, where your senses are there, the five physical senses plus the brain, six and all. Whatever sense data together with the mind, the awareness, upon contact with your sense basis, you will understand what happened. Then you can even see the birth and formation of thought. You can even see the arising of consciousness. Then you can also develop the ability to be aware of the mental movement, the content of consciousness, how through your views, opinion, and conditioning you input them. Then when you have wisdom, you act according to wisdom, no more according to memory, no more according to your view, opinion, and conditioning. All this you can see them. Then the essential Dhamma, three evil root, five spiritual faculty, five mental hindrance. Then later on, you can even see the 12 link, paticca samuppada. Then you can be at the moment of feeling, you will stay there. At the moment of consciousness, you will be able to stay there, pure awareness, before you input the content. And when you input the content, when the sankhara move, you can be at the moment of sankhara. You can see the arising and passing away. So all this is possible. Just silent, maintain awareness. Then later on, if you don't want to know, you just aware. You can be aware of the heartbeat also. The moment Sometimes when you become very skillful, upon contact, you can just shut it off. The content of consciousness didn't go in. You can do that. Then every moment of awareness, it just stops there. Aware, stop. Aware, stop. So the awareness is just aware of whatever that is going on. Then you allow this also to stabilize. Then you will understand a lot of things on your own. Then later on, when you come out of the meditation, when your mind is ready in sati, you can try to maintain this state of mind state of constantly meditative, ever mindful. They call this heedfulness. When you are ever mindful to cultivate the wonderful power, you become heedful. So this state, not only in the form of meditation, you develop it, you must also carry it into your daily life. That's why after the form of meditation, when you come out, any movement or activity, your awareness will be there automatically, where your mind has entered sati. Then after that, every movement, every action, you will experience the silent mind moving with the physical body. So for those who know what meditation is, they will understand why the Buddha and the Kayanupassana develop the mindfulness of the four postures, followed by daily mindfulness of the in-between movements. So this daily mindfulness is actually the continuous awareness of our kaya activity. So whatever action, movement within the present moment, your awareness will be with it. That's how Kayanupassana, the first foundation of mindfulness, is very important. It anchors your mind to your kaya, so that you can be mindful of all your activity and movement, and that will lead to daily mindfulness. But to stabilize this daily mindfulness, you must have initial wisdom, yoniso manasikara. For yoniso manasikara to arise and stabilize, you must constantly listen to the Dhamma, then constantly develop the contemplative wisdom too, through the silent, reflect, contemplate, inquire, and develop the deeper understanding of the essential Dhamma. Inquire through asking, why did the Buddha say this? How can I understand all this? Then through your past experience or memory, you can recollect all the first noble truth, eight reality. When the Buddha said birth is suffering, old age, sickness and death is suffering. So you contemplate, reflect, inquire, why did the Buddha say this? How can I understand birth is suffering? So you recollect the birth process, recollect what you have observed or learned about people getting old, getting sick, then how finally death torment people. So all this you can see. Then as you go through life, you also understand how separation from loved ones, prized possession, and the thing you hold on to dearly, how it afflicts you, how it causes you suffering. And you can trace the origination factor. It is due to your self-delusion, thinking that you exist. Then the egoic mind grabs and clings and holds on to things. All the things that you think you own, your possession, your loved ones, and whatever that you hold on to dearly. Then from there, the six reality, when you are with people whom you don't like. This one may be when you are younger, or as you grow up, after you graduate, you go into the career life. The career life also experience this style of reality. When you are with people whom you don't like, means your bosses, your whatever superior that take advantage of you or give pressure to you. So all this you will come to see them and you can reflect on them. When you are mindful and aware, you learn many things. Then the seventh reality is when things don't go your way, when your expectations in mind, in life are not met, when you cannot get your, what you want, like the Buddha said. When you cannot get what you want, or when things don't go your way, you experience unhappiness, leading to suffering. Then final reality, the eighth, is the Buddha summarized all of suffering as the five grasping aggregate, or five aggregate of forming mind. He said, if you have self-delusion, you deludedly grasp and cling to these five aggregates of forming mind, rupa, vedana, sanya, sankara, vijnana, thinking that they are real, they are you, then you will suffer. Yeah. So put it to test, inquire, investigate, find out. If you cling to feeling, do you suffer? If you cling to things that you perceive, do you suffer? If you cling to your views, opinion, and conditioning, mental conditioning, or your mind state, do you suffer? You can check, investigate into all this on your own. Then you cling to consciousness, whatever you are conscious of, seeing consciousness, hearing, smell, taste, tactile, or thought. You check whether you suffer or not. So this is contemplative wisdom, inquiry. The first and second turning wisdom will give rise to the initial wisdom, yoniso manasika. And this one, when they arise, it will help you develop a very stable daily mindfulness. Because when you have the initial wisdom, your mind will not stir like before, will not react to sense experience, the like and dislike. They become less and less. Finally, they cease or they fade away. That's why only wisdom free the mind, nothing else. Okay, I'll let you meditate on your own. Then when the 30 minutes is up, the alarm will ring. you can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation. Then turn to page 6 of the chanting book. We will chant the invocation to the devas. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta Chakravalesu Atra Gacchantu Devata Sattamam Muni Rajasa Sunantu Sakkamokkhadam Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa Iti Peso Bhagava Arahang Samma Sambuddho Vijja Charana Sampanno Sugato Lokavidu Anuttaro Purisa Dhamma Sarati Satta Deva Manusanang Buddho Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehipaseko Opanayiko Pachyatang Veditatbo Vinohiti Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Ujjupatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Nyayapatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Samichipatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Yaditang Chattari Purisa Yukani Atta Purisa Pugala Esa Bhagavato Savakasangho Ahuneyo Pahuneyo Dakeneyo Anjali Karaneyo Anuttarang Punyaketang Lokasati Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Triple Jam. Buddham Pujayami. Dhammang Pujayami. Sanghang Pujayami. Okay, you can be seated. Then we will continue with the book. We are at chapter 41, I think, page 576, the perfections. Tell me, how to bring the chair over. Oh, okay, Jin Hao is free. Okay, thank you. Okay. I think Acha Anand reporting finish. Everybody cover already. So we continue from where we stop. So turn to chapter 41, page 576. The perfections. The title is The Perfection. So this refer to the parami, parami or paramita. The 10 perfection. So there is a saying in the Sutta Nipata, work for the welfare of others. So when you can work for the welfare of living beings or others, means you have a selfless heart. You have true compassion. Then I think in school, if you join the St. John's Ambulance, or is it the Scout, the Boy Scout and the Girl Scout? They have this service above self. Which one is it? Is it the Scout or the St. John's Ambulance? I also cannot remember. I remember the teacher always tell us, service above self. Means you should serve others first. So here the Buddha also have a saying, work for the welfare of others. There are 10 transcendental virtues which in Pali are termed parami that every bodhisattva practices in order to gain supreme enlightenment, sammasambuddhahood. These 10 perfections are called parami. I think in Pali, 10 is dasa, if I'm not wrong. So dasa parami. That's why sometimes we use this word parami in a very loose way. When somebody has like good condition or good fortune or good blessing, we say, yeah, your parami is very good. But actually, parami is supposed to be perfection. So you haven't developed the perfection. So to us, parami means goodness, merits, wholesomeness. So we use it in a very loose way. You have good parami. Sometimes monk also say that. Achan, achan, whatever. He always say you got good parami. So the 10 perfection or the 10 transcendental virtue are, first is generosity. Generosity, the dana parami. So according to the Buddha, generosity is very important. All wholesomeness and goodness start with generosity, dana parami. Without dana parami, it's very difficult to accumulate wholesomeness and merits to have the good life. That's why in the cultivation, they always translate the Noble Eightfold Path as Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. Then there is another one, Dana, Sila, and Bhavana. So Noble Eightfold Path is basically Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. But Samadhi and Panya is part of meditation. That's why it's called Bhavana. Then before Sila, they always teach you how to develop generosity. And the Buddha, when he speaks to lay people, he always share this understanding of having dana parami, cultivate dana parami. Then from dana, you can develop good sila. Then you meditate to develop bhavana. Without dana, generosity, you don't have merits. It's very difficult for you to have the appropriate condition to meet up with the wise, avoid the foolish and the heedless, so that you can have the condition to cultivate the Buddha Dhamma. So dana parami helps in many ways. So this dana parami, not only Sammasambuddha have to perfect, lay people, normal cultivator, they also have to generate this wholesomeness, this virtue. Then after dana is sila, morality. Sila is a must. If you don't keep your sila, your karmic nature will fall. You will get into big trouble. You will commit evil. So sila is to protect you from downfall, protect you from committing evil. Because those who violate these precepts of sila, especially the five precepts, they constitute major evils. That's why the five precepts are very unique. It is due to the Buddha's love and compassion, out of love and compassion for living being. He introduced the precepts and he advised the lay people, you must keep this five, minimum five precepts, where they constitute major evil. Then the third virtue is nikama or renunciation. Here renunciation, the meaning is very deep. It's not just the usual common understanding of renunciation. Normally people talk about renunciation, the first thing that comes to mind is what? Shave your hair, renounce the world and become a monk or a nun. But here the meaning of renunciation is much deeper. You should be able to renounce all things. If you cannot perfect your renunciation virtue, you will have suffering. Because you will attach, you will cling, you will crave, and you will try to hold on to all these so-called beautiful things, important things. So renunciation in its ultimate sense is born of wisdom. The wisdom enables you to renounce all things. That's why to perfect your second bodhisattva vow, when bodhisattva vow to endure and severe all suffering, they must cultivate wisdom leading to their ability to renounce all things. Whatever you attach and cling to, it will give rise to suffering where there is craving. So dana, sila, then nikama. That's why followed by wisdom or panya. Then virya is also very important. Spiritual zeal or spiritual tenacity to go this way after understanding how important the Dhamma is and how wonderful this teaching is. So the faith will lead to virya. Then patient endurance, the next one, next virtue is kanti. Patient endurance is kanti. So patience need to be cultivated. You must have a lot of patience. Patience with yourself. Patience with the cultivation. I realize a lot of people don't have patience. They are so eager to progress. And they really want to progress. You can't have that type of strong mind that determine to progress and to be successful in your training to awaken. But don't attach. Develop the understanding that all this require the appropriate timing, causes and conditions. It must be fulfilled. So when you understand this, you will just do. Don't try to know. Patiently cultivate. So faith, sincerity leading to perseverance. Yeah. Then when you just cultivate, means you can develop the patience needed for you to progress along the path of Dhamma. And you can succeed. Because you can let things be accord and flow. Condition like that, things will like that. It cannot be otherwise. And all these are wisdom that will liberate your mind. So when you have patience, when you can accept things as they are, see things as they are, develop the patience to accord and flow, then you are not in a hurry. There is no craving or desire to achieve anything, to realize anything. But all this will naturally unfold. That's why this perfection of Kanti, patient endurance, is very important. Then next is truthfulness, Satya. And this one is also very important. If you can maintain this virtue, you will root out selfishness. When you are truthful, you cannot be selfish. True or not? When you are sincere and truthful, you cannot be selfish. Selfish people like to tell lies. True or not? Because they scare people know their motive. So they tend to deceive, cheat and tell lies. So if you cannot keep this virtue of such a truthfulness, chances are you have selfishness. That's why you cannot root out the evil. So truthfulness is a very important parami. If possible, never lie. But sometimes situation warrant you to come out with. It's not really a very severe type of lie, in the sense that your intention is good, like a doctor. If you are a doctor, then your patient actually came to you. Then you say, I need to check you up, I need to do a biopsy to confirm. Then the result come out positive. So how are you going to tell the client? Or your patient. So for those who have the love and compassion and understanding, the doctor will be very tactful. So he may sometimes need to tell you a white lie. Oh, you are okay, not serious. The result came out. I think it's curable. Have faith. Then you need to go through a certain type of observation or he actually lie. Because the truth is, could be very severe cancer, terminal or whatever. But if you out of the blue just tell the patient who don't have the preparation to receive this type of news, it can cause them a lot of problem. The deep fear, that one can paralyze them. A few people who went through that, they gave me some good feedback. They said, Brother Theo, when they told me I got cancer, what stage? He said, my whole face pucat. What is the English word for pucat? Turn pale. Turn pale. Panic until all the Dhamma also fly out of the window. The fear is so intense. So, all this is a result of lack of tactfulness. If you have thankfulness, you should calm people down. Don't worry. Yeah? Yeah, treatable, curable. Yeah, there is some positive result. But not that bad. So sometimes you need to be thankful, need to be skillful in the way you talk to your patient. Yeah. I read one article somebody wrote to me. Have you heard of the Indian lady, the two sisters who sent their mother that they love very much to a specialist center in Singapore? She was in the ICU for 58 days. The medical bill came out to be 1 over million Sing. 58 days. That's a Hui Ling lucky, yeah? In France. Spain. Stay there so many months. Also insurance pay. That one, the two sisters finally regret and wrote that very strong letter. So now this doctor is a family friend, I think the wife's friend, also another doctor. He shared with the people, the public, I think, so it's in the WhatsApp. And he said the sister, they were very angry when they label their mother as customer, not patient, no, customer. And you know why the mother died? The mother actually did not die, but they believe in sending the mother to the best specialist center, understand? Reputable one, because they love the mom so much and they can afford also. But I think they have some insurance too. So what happened was, the hospital is interested in your address, where you stay. If you stay high-end area with nice bungalow, they know you can afford. So no insurance also, they will take you in. But you got insurance, they make sure your insurance is enough to cover. So what they do is, just go in, do the full checkup. Then all the 10 or 12 specialists, one by one come and diagnose her, no, and prescribe medication. It seems the medical bill come out. The doctor, they all analyze. They question them, what type of drug you give. She was given over the 58 days 1,000 drugs. He said, you can be a healthy person with this drug, you will die also. So instead of treating the overall as a patient, the each specialist, according to this doctor, look at you differently. The heart doctor look at your heart. The respiratory one look at your lung. Then the liver one look at your liver. Then everyone got an opinion. No? Then they give you the drugs. No? So he said because of that, they were so unhappy because it's so unethical. And it's all about money. And the worst is they put on the name card there, customer, no, not patient. Oh, God. So that one was something that medical profession, whatever job you are in, right livelihood or right living, you have to be sincere, professional, honest. Don't just because of greed. So truthfulness is very important. Sincerity is very important. Otherwise, you entangle your karma. If this is what you do, in future you become the victim. Future life, you end up also suffer like these two daughters. The letter she wrote is very touching. You read. He said they regret sending their mother like go to hell for 58 days without regaining consciousness. That cold and eerie ICU. And just hit with a medical bill of 1 over million Sing, and she died without regaining consciousness, and nobody know what happened to her. Injection, drug, everything. So x-ray, radiation. Then he say the way they treat cancer is the worst. They give you three things, he said. Surgery, he said, is to cut you up. Chemo is to poison you. Then the last one is what? Radiation is to burn you out. So cut you out, poison you, and burn you out, and charge you with a big medical fee. So he said, they have a lot of way to recover from cancer, it seems, according to the doctor friend. If I have not deleted the video, I send it to you all. It's very interesting, very nice. I don't know whether I have deleted or not. The next one is very good. The next virtue is adhitana. You know what is adhitana? Adhitana is affirmation. But here they put determination. No, actually it's an affirmation. Affirmation of truth and all those things. Like making vow, adhitana. Like making aspiration, affirmation. So this one is very useful, very powerful. If you know how to use this, it cuts short your training. Shorten your cultivation time by a lot. You invoke power of merits. That's why you need Dana Parami. You need all the merits and wholesomeness to enable this virtue, adhitana, to be very effective. So when you start to develop the cultivation following the advice of the Buddha, you will develop a lot of wholesomeness, a lot of parami. Then you can invoke power of merits for causes and conditions to arise to help you in your cultivation, or to help you deal with life situation and problem. Just like our Bodhisattva vow in the Katne, in time of tribulation, that's why you need to not only cultivate virtue but perfect them all. Together with the wisdom and understanding. Then the ninth one is loving kindness or metta. You must have metta, love, leading to compassion. Then finally, of course, upekkha, equanimity, enlightenment, born of wisdom. So this 10 perfection, if you do it and complete it, it can give rise to causes and conditions for you to realize Sammasambuddhahood. Then according to the Chariya Patika commentary, parami are those virtues which are cultivated with compassion, guided by reason, uninfluenced by selfish motive, and unsullied. How to pronounce this word? Unsullied, solid by misbelief and all feeling of self-conceit. The action of a bodhisattva are absolutely selfless. Being prompted solely by compassion towards all beings. So boundless is his love, and so pervasive is his infinite compassion, that unceasingly throughout the series of his countless life, he strives to diminish suffering, to elevate to greater honor the poor and the lowly, and to help the needy in every possible way. So this is the definition, Theravada. But for us who really understand the Bodhisattva way, we accord and flow with condition. We will have love, compassion, and all the understanding and virtue. Towards the later part of your cultivation, you will also know the three hallmarks of winning. Not only you cultivate direct to the true nature and true mind. The first hallmark is no thought. You realize no thought, then you realize the nature. Then you connect to your nature. After that, you will realize no mark. No mark of a self cultivating, no mark of living beings, then no mark of Dhamma and all the other worldly things. Even all the existential existence, life, all these are all not real. That's a noma of life. Dhamma, everything. These are reality that pertains to the conditioned world, existential world. But we need the ultimate truth. In true emptiness, within the unconditioned, all this don't exist. That's how you will have the understanding. Then finally, when your mind does not dwell, you will understand what is non-dwelling. Non-dwelling means you cannot attach, you cannot cling, you cannot hold. And the mind is completely free. It understands. That's why it will not like what this author mentioned, serve the lowly or the sick. No. It will accord and flow with condition. Condition like that, things be like that. Then they will accord and flow. Then living beings that has affinity or what, that can be saved, they will save. Then when there is condition to help, only they help. Otherwise they won't, like ordinary people, too eager to help. They will not do all those things. As you cultivate, you will understand all this. Okay, I read on. He seeks no delight in self-indulgence, while his less fortunate brother and sister are steep in misery. To alleviate suffering, he would not hesitate to sacrifice his most cherished possession, not expecting life itself, as illustrated in the story in the Vagri-jataka. So this one is according to this author, his own viewpoint and all those things. As you walk this path, as you develop understanding, you will know how to do your work. You can sacrifice, you can do a lot of things, but within your limitation, within your understanding, you cannot go beyond what you cannot do. So this one requires a lot of understanding. Then with heart full of compassion, he worked for the will and happiness of all beings. This is true, though always guided by reason. It's not guided by reason, guided by understanding, wisdom. He is generously endowed with all the essential qualities of both head and heart in their full development, which are dedicated to the service of the world at large. So all this is just a general expression of what the author believes. But as you walk this path, there is a lot more things. Your understanding go beyond all this. In serving others, a bodhisattva is not actuated by a desire for power or worldly possession. This one is obvious, where they know there is no mark. But there is such thing as a law of karma, so they will not violate that law of karma. They will do their duty very well. That's why this enlightened being all, they have right duty, Knowing as he does, the fame comes unsought to him who is worthy of it. Why should he pursue it? He is completely altruistic in his motive and egoism. He is completely altruistic in his motive, and egoism play no part in his disinterested activity. Let layman and monk both think that this was done by myself in every work, great or small. Let them refer to me. Such is the aspiration of the fool. His desire and pride increase, states the Dhammapada. Such narrow and selfish aspiration do not enter into the mind of a bodhisattva. So this one is according to the author. Then they start off by discussing the first parami, dana. Dana or generosity is the first parami. It confer upon the giver the double blessing of inhibiting immoral thought of selfishness. This one is just to explain to you. It's the ennobler of precept. So instead of not to be selfish only, you develop generosity. So that you can give. You not only don't steal, but you develop the ennobler of generosity, to offer, to give, to help. So here he said, he gives double blessing of inhibiting immoral thought of selfishness while developing pure thought of selflessness. It bless him that gives and him that takes. So when you make offering, both receive blessing. You can see that when you make offering to people sincerely, they receive with understanding, with joy, then they offer back. Like you offer to the monk, dana. What happened after they partake the food? They will invoke blessing. They will wish for your protection and make aspiration on your behalf. Then they also contemplate and reflect on the food. Then they develop the understanding of what is the purpose of food. Then after that, if they have the understanding, they will also rejoice with your generosity. Then they invoke power of merit. May this wholesomeness that you all have developed through this sincere offering of food, dana-parami, arises the causes and conditions for you all to avoid all the foolish and the heedless, meet up with the wise so that enlightenment in the here and the now can be realized. Or may it pave the way for there to be causes and conditions for you to progress along the path of Dhamma. Or for you to be well protected by the triple gem and all those things. A bodhisattva is not concerned as to whether the recipient is truly in need or not, for his one objective in practicing generosity, as he does, is to eliminate craving and lies dormant that lies dormant within himself. The joy of service is attendant happiness, and the elevation of suffering are other blessings of generosity. What do you think of this sentence? Do you fully agree with what the author said? They want to give, they just give to everybody. No such thing. A bodhisattva will not do that, understand? There must be causes and conditions, there must be need and all those things. So a lot of understanding, when you walk this path, you will understand it differently. So here they are trying to portray a bodhisattva as not concerned as to whether the recipient is truly in need or not. Whether you need or not, if you want to give, I just give you. I just offer to you. So not the what they call the right type of bodhisattva. Your bodhisattva don't just want to do. They have wisdom, they have understanding. When they see condition, then they will manifest. Then they accord and flow. When condition is there, they will do something. When people don't want to be helped, you don't try to keep over. Hey, I help you. No, you don't wanna. Why you like that? You are so foolish. If they do, that means they have ego, understand? Still got the eye and all those things. So what is stated here by the author, you need to reflect, contemplate, and find out as you walk this path, when you have the understanding, you behave differently, not according to what they say, according to understanding, wisdom. Okay, then next paragraph. In extending his love with supernormal generosity, he makes no distinction between one being and another. But he uses judicious and discrimination in this generosity. If, for instance, a drunkard were to seek his help, and if he were convinced that the drunkard would misuse his gift, the Bodhisattva, without hesitation, would refuse it. For such misplaced generosity would not constitute a parami. So this is the author adding on. So it's obvious that if the fellow is a drug addict, you go and offer him drug. Cannot be that you offer him money to buy more drug. Cannot be that. That's why if the condition is not there, no point. It's better to teach them the Dhamma, the understanding, so that they can come out of it themselves. Even this life, my nature, I know. I never interfere with people's life. I never even try to help in that sense, like too eager to help people. No. For me, if there is condition, I will share the Dhamma. That's it. If you understand, if you see the important, make use of it. Then do it based on that understanding. Then you will benefit. But if you don't accept or don't want to make use of it, no problem. Build your life. Because of condition, my nature arise and do its duty, finish. After that, whether you agree, don't agree, follow or don't follow, not important. Where you are just the way you are. Because of affinity condition, you are here. And this opportunity of condition and affinity is because of some past life good deeds. But if you got karmic obstruction, it doesn't work. Even though you have the condition and affinity, you can come, you listen, then you disappear. On your own, I never do anything. Because of your karmic obstruction. Because when you have karmic obstruction, you are so conditioned by the wrong thing that you did. So that one will hinder you from listening and understanding and accepting or follow. So a lot of things about law of karma is not so straightforward. Not like what people think. And the best way is to develop this wisdom to accord and flow, to understand condition clearly. Means their condition, everyone's condition. Everyone is different. That's why if you were to observe my nature's doing this Dhamma work, if you are observant, you will observe many very unique things. For me, whether you know me or I don't know you, doesn't make a difference. You got condition, people whom I don't know, I will go or out and help too, if there's condition. But if there's no condition, you're very close to me also, no use. It could be my brother, my sister, or my good friend. And there's no condition for you to receive. But people who doesn't know me, have the condition, they will receive. Then like you all, most of you come into contact with my nature, not because you know me before. You all come on your own. Somebody may have spoken to you or informed you, or you might have certain reason to be here. But when you are here, it depends on your past, your karma, your parami, your condition, and how much you can receive also depend on that. Because this nature never like other people discriminate. Oh, you are my friend, you are close to me, I teach you more. Cannot, you cannot do that. Even my own father cannot. My son also know, he told me about one occasion. He said, Daddy, no condition. Well, my father at that time, not in the mind state to listen. Well, he very scared I become monk. Then he keep on resisting when I try to share the Dhamma with him. I want to share if you there is condition, but that thought in his mind, the fear that I will become a monk, that one obstruct him. And that is selfishness, do you know, as parents. Then later on he know, finally, that I never force him, I never talk to him anymore after that. Then he saw the way I do things is so different. And I help everybody, all the brothers and sisters in the house that have condition, that need help. Then I did it so beautifully. That's why he finally knew, and he purposely kept a calendar, a very nice calendar, wait for me to arrive. I usually go back to my hometown, visit my father at least once or twice a year. Chinese New Year or some occasion. Then he waited for me to arrive. Then that day when I arrived, he smiled. First time I saw him smile, then I know something is up already. Then he spoke to me, he said, I have nothing to give you. There is something that I have kept and I want to give it to you. Then I was so surprised, but he never gave me anything. Of course, he supported my education, supported my life, and all those things, sacrifice for her. That one he do a lot. But he never buy anything and give to the children. Except for buying supper and food for us, yes, durian and all that. But he never like personally go and buy you a gift. My father never do that one. Because that is his character. And when he took out that calendar, oh, I thought, because it was a very big and very rare calendar, so I thought he purposely reserved this for me. Then when I opened it up, I was so surprised. It was a Buddha with radiant light shining. Then I knew already, he is now ready to listen. After that, I said, thank you so much. I said, I had a lot of joy. I said, do you know who is the Buddha or not? That time he don't understand. So that time I explained to him, he listened, no? Because he know I won't become a monk. Because after so many years, the initial year he really freaked. I graduated, became an engineer. And he was so proud, I bring honor to the family. Then when I went back and talked to him about Dhamma, he's so scared because he heard some of the neighbor, the son become a monk, Mahayana temple. The father mother cry like anything, like they lost a son. It's like your son go and become a soldier. So all this, the tradition actually created a lot of this so-called misunderstanding. Whereas in India, Sri Lanka, do you know when you have a child, a son, who wants to become a monk, renounce, they are so happy because they believe my son can serve humanity, the whole world. If he stay as a lay person, he only serve the family. Understand? And this one is very virtuous. You can have a son that go for renounce and realize the enlightenment. The parami is very, very significant. And also as parent, you give birth to a child that has this type of parami, you are very, very blessed. That's why last time my wife used to tell me, if ever want to give birth again, must be a good one, a virtuous one. Otherwise, no point. So you can never know. That's why sometimes people complain, born as a woman. Not so good. PG not here. PG vow next life become a male. Don't want to be a female anymore. But do you know, born as a female, but for her, she didn't get married. There's like no chance. But you get married, you give birth to a child. That one is an arahant or a bodhisattva. Holy chabilia, when I tell you. Understand? But Tammy, don't worry. Your way also very good. No need to get married. You yourself do it. No need to wait for children to realize. So after that, your mother become very blessed. Your father become very blessed. So really true. Because a lot of these great beings, they choose their parent. So sometimes you become female, born as a female. Don't go and complain. It could be a blessing in disguise. You born as a man, less chance. You don't give birth, but you assist in creating the child. So the bodhisattva way, when you understand, is very interesting and very unique. Okay, we go on last paragraph, page 578. Should anyone seek his help for a worthy purpose, then instead of assuming a false air of dignity or make false pretension, he would simply express his deep obligation for the opportunity, effort, and willingly and humbly render every possible aid. Yet he would never set it down to his own credit as a favor conferred upon another, nor would he ever regret the man as his debtor for the service rendered. He is interested only in the good act, but in nothing else springing from it. He expects no rewards in return, nor even does he crave enhancement of reputation for it. So all these are understood. They will never have any selfish motive behind what they do. A bodhisattva, though always ready to confer a favor, seldom if ever stoop to ask one. The Brahma Jataka, number 323, relates that once the bodhisattva was leading an ascetic life in the park of a certain king who used to visit him daily and minister to his needs. Yet for 12 long years he refrained from asking the boon of a pair of sandals and a leaf parasol, trifling as they were. So this is the author's view again. When questioned as to this his strange but modest attitude, he replied to the king, "Who begged Panchala Lord to weep are fain. They who refuse are apt to weep again. In abundance he gives to others, irrespective of caste, creed or color, though seeking nothing for himself in return. A characteristic of his mind is perfect contentment, such as the poet Edward Dyer contemplated. Some have too much, yet still do crave. I little have, and seek no more. They are but poor, though much they have, and I am rich with little store." So this is also matching with the Buddha saying, the highest wealth is contentment. When you are contented, you are no longer poor. When you are very wealthy, not contented means you still want, you are poor. So this is the similar saying. In the Kangha Jataka, number 440, it is related that Saka, King Saka, Attracted by the exemplary virtuous life of the Bodhisattva, approach him and offer him boon. I think boon is a, is it a Thai word? No, boon means like dana, offering. I know, when you make offering, it become merit. It become merit. Offer boon means you cannot offer merit, isn't it? You have to offer thing, isn't it? But that is a boon, that's enough. Yeah. According to Sakka's kindly request, he wished for the following. May I harbor no malice or hatred against my neighbor. May I not covet my neighbor's possession. May I cherish no personal affection towards others. May I possess equanimity. Greatly disappointed, though full of admiration for the disinterest shown, Sakka entreated him to choose yet another boon. He replied, where in the wood I ever dwell, where all alone dwell I, grant no disease may mark my peace or break my ecstasy. Hearing this, Sakka thought, wise Kangha, in choosing a boon, choosing nothing connected with food. All he chooses pertain to the ascetic life. Yet again Sakka said, choose a boon. The Bodhisattva responded, O Sakka, Lord of the world, I choose. Thou dost declare, no creature be out harm for me, O Sakka, anywhere, neither in body nor in mind. This Sakka is my prayer. O Bodhisattva exercises this virtue of generosity to such an extent that he is prepared to give away not only wealth and other cherished possessions, but also his kingdom, his limb, and even his children and wife. And he is ever ready to sacrifice his own life wherever such sacrifice would benefit humanity. Actually, it's the last part is not correct. It's based on the need and the causes and conditions. Without the causes and conditions, he will not simply do. So this part, what is stated here, the Bodhisattva, certain life, of, during certain part of his segmented life, he did them all. He renounced and gave up his kingdom, the last time. Then when he was tested by this king of Kalinga, or Okalinga, I forgot the name of the kingdom already, the Kondanya, finally he became Kondanya. His limb, and even his children and wife. This one was a test. I think King Sakka, or the no, one of the devas came down and tested him. And he really willing to give up the children and the wife, the child and the wife. Then sacrifice his own life is correct. Because he jumped down and feed the wounded tigress. So that he can have energy to feed the cubs. The Visantara Jataka relates how Prince Visantara was a child of only 8 years old. He thought with all sincerity, if one should need my heart, I will cut open my breast, tear it out and give it. If one should need my eye, I will gouge them out and give him. If one should need my flesh, I will cut off what he needed. The very Jataka depicts a glowing term, an incident in which he willingly and joyfully sacrificed his life for the good and happiness of others. In the Jataka Mala, the story runs as follows. On one occasion, when the Bodhisattva was passing through a forest, accompanied by his disciple, he saw a tigress, this is the one, and her 3 cubs near death from starvation. Moved to compassion, he asked his disciples to secure some food for them. There was but a pretext to send him away, to send them away. For the Bodhisattva thought, why should I search after meat from the body of another, while the whole of my body is available? Finding other meat is a matter of chance, and I may well lose the opportunity of doing my duty. This body being found and a source of suffering, he is not wise who would not rejoice at it being spent for the benefit of another. There are but two things that make one disregard the grief of another attached to one's own pleasure, and the absence of the power of helping. But I cannot take my pleasure while another grieves as long as I am able to help him. Why should I, therefore, be indifferent? So by casting myself down this precipice, I sacrifice my miserable body, which will feed the tigress, thus preventing her from killing the young one and saving the young ones from dying by the teeth of their mother. Furthermore, by so doing, I set an example to those whose longing are for the good of the world. I encourage the feeble, I gladden those who understand the meaning of charity, and I inspire the virtue. And finally, that opportunity I yearn for. When may I have the opportunity of benefiting others by offering myself, my own limbs? I shall obtain it now and acquire before long the Sammasambuddhahood, supreme enlightenment. So when you read this Jataka story, don't try to be foolish. Try to be a hero. Ayo, Sakyamuni did it. I got chance, I also want to do. If you are not ready, you don't have this type of understanding and paramiya, you go and do, you go and find out what will happen to you. Because this was, he knew he has to do that to finally perfect his parami of generosity. Do you understand? Able to sacrifice his own life, able to give up his kingdom. These are very difficult things to do, but to perfect that perfection, you need to go through. So that's why that life, he saw the condition. He explained towards the end that he did it because he knew this is the final test that he need to go through before he perfected this perfection. Thinking thus, he cast himself down the precipice, sacrificed his life for the welfare of those helpless beings. Then the Nivari Nipala Pasha version of this interesting and pitiful story is as follows. In the remote past, there lived a devout and powerful king called Maharatha. He had three sons by the name of Mahapashada, Mahadeva, and Mahasattva, all good and obedient. One bright day, the king, accompanied by the prince and attendant, went on an excursion in the forest path. The young prince, admiring and enchanting beauty of the flower and tree, gradually penetrated far into the thick forest. The attendants noticed their absence and reported the matter to the king. He ordered his minister to go in search for them and return to his palace. The three princes, wandering through the forest, reached a mountain top. From there, the elders saw the starving tigress with five cubs, almost on the verge of death. For 7 days since her delivery, she has been without food. The cub approached the mother to suck milk, but she has nothing to satisfy their hunger, and the tigress, driven by starvation, was clearly at the point of unnaturally devouring her own cup. The eldest brother was the first to see this pathetic spectacle. He showed the tigress to his brother and said, "Behold that pitiful sight, O brother. That starving tigress is about to devour her cub. How wretched is their condition. What is their staple food, brother?" inquired Mahasattva. "Flesh and blood is the staple food of tiger and lion," replied Mahaprasada. "The tigress seems to be very weak. Eventually, she is without food for some day. How noble if one could sacrifice one's body for their sake. But who is willing to make such a great sacrifice?" replied Mahadeva. "Surely no one would be able to do so, stated Mahaprasada. "I lack intelligence. Ignorant people like us would not be able to sacrifice their body for the sake of another. But there may be selfless people of boundless compassion who willingly do so," said Mahasattva in a merciful tone. Thus they discussed among themselves and cast a last glance at the helpless tigress and they depart. Mahasattva thought to himself, "Sacrifice I must this fleeting body for the sake of this starving tigress. Foul is this body, and is subject to decay and death. One may adorn and perfume it, but soon it will stink and perish." Reflecting thus, he requested his brother to proceed as he would be retiring in the forest for some reason or other. He retraced his steps to the place where the tigress was resting, hanging his garment on a tree. Again, he thought, "Work I must for the will of others. Compassionate we must be towards all beings. To serve those who need our succor," how to pronounce this word, "is our paramount duty. This foul body of mine will I sacrifice and thus save the tigress and her five cub. By this meritorious act, may I gain Sama Sambuddhahood." Wow, he made that aspiration. Huh? You can do it. "And save all beings from the ocean of samsara. May all beings be well and happy." See, some more sad metta to all beings. Moved by compassion and inspired by the spirit of selfless service, dauntlessly he jumped off the precipice towards the tigress. The fall did not result in an instantaneous death. The tigress, though ruthless by nature, pitied the bodhisattva and would not even touch his body. Wow, this tigress also must be a very unique being. Huh? The bodhisattva thought otherwise. "Obviously, the poor animal is too weak to devour me." So he went to search for a weapon. He came across a bamboo splitter and drew near the tigress and cut off his neck and fell dead on the ground in a pool of blood. The hungry tigress greedily drank the blood and devoured the flesh, leaving mere bones. The story adds that at the moment the bodhisattva sacrificed his body, the earth quaked, the water of the ocean were disturbed, the sun's ray dimmed, eyesight was temporarily blurred. Deva gave cry of sadhu, and Parajata flower came down as rain from heaven. Affected by the earthquake, the two elder brothers rightly guessed that the younger brother must have become a prey to the tigress. Surely, Mahasattva must have sacrificed his life, for he spoke in a very merciful tone, said Mahadeva. Both of them turned back and went to the spot. They were horrified and awestruck at the unexpected spectacle. What they saw was not their beloved brother, but a mass of bone besmeared with blood. On a tree close by, they saw the hanging garment. They weep and fainted, and on regaining consciousness, they returned home with a heavy heart. On the very day the Bodhisattva sacrificed his life, the Mother Queen dreamt that she was dead, and her teeth had fallen out, and that she experienced a pain as if her body were cut by a sharp weapon. Furthermore, she dreamt that a hawk came dropping down and carried one of his three beautiful pigeons that were perched on the roof. The queen was frightened, and on waking, she remembered that her princess had gone for an airing in the forest. She hastened to the king and relayed the inauspicious dream, on being informed that the princess were missing. She entreated the king to send messenger in search for them. Some minister who had gone earlier to search for them returned to the palace with the sad news of the lamentable death of the youngest prince. Hearing it, nobody was able to refrain from weeping. The king, however, comforted the queen, and mounting an elephant, speedily proceeded to the forest with his attendant and brought back the other two grieving sons. So great was their grief that at first they were speechless. Later, summoning up courage, they explained to their bereaved mother the heroic deed of their noble brother. Soon the order was given by the king to make necessary arrangements for them all to visit the memorable scene of the incident. All reached the spot in due course. At the mere sight of the blood-smeared bone and the dearest son scattered here and there, both the king and the queen fainted. Wow, not only the son, now the parents also fainted. The Purohita Brahma instantly poured sandalwood water over them, and they regained consciousness. Thereupon the king ordered his minister to gather all the hair, bones, and garments and heap them together, worship them, advising them to erect a golden charitya and shrine the relics. With a grieved heart, he departed to his palace. The charitya was afterward named Om Namo Buddha. At the end of the Jataka story, it is stated that the charitya is at present called Namura. Oh, means real story. In spite of differences in the two versions, the center point in both is the self-sacrifice of the Bodhisattva. It is immaterial whether the Bodhisattva sacrificed his life as an ascetic or as a prince. As in the other Jataka, the Nidana, or the occasion for the Jataka appear in this one too. But the identification of the personage found at the end of the Jataka is absent here. The Nivari Jataka is obviously more descriptive than the Sanskrit version. The origin of the Nivari is uncertain. So this is just the record. Dealing with the Bodhisattva's mode of practice, Dana, an interesting account, appear in an important text of the Chariya Pitaka commentary. This one is interesting. In giving food, the Bodhisattva intend thereby to endow the recipient with long life, beauty, happiness, and strength. So, ayuk wana sukang palang. So ayuk is long life. Wana is beauty, fair skin. Ayuk wana sukang is happiness. Palang is strength. Wisdom and the highest fruit, nibbana. He gives thirsty beings to drink with the object of quenching the thirst of passion. Garment to acquire moral shame. moral drive, conveyance to cultivate psychic power. Wow. Order for the sense of sila, garland. What is this word, the meaning? Angunja. To gain the glory pertaining to the Buddha's virtue. Seats to win the seat of enlightenment. Lodging with the hope of serving as a refuge to the world. Like to obtain the five kind of eyes, namely physical eye, eye of wisdom, divine eye, Buddha's eye, and the eye of omniscience. Form, to possess the Buddha aura. Sound, to cultivate a voice as sweet as Brahma. Taste, so that he may be pleasing to all. Contact, to gain delicate organism of a Buddha. Medicine for the sake of deathlessness, Nibbana. He emancipates slave in order to deliver man from the thraldom of passion. Renounces children to develop the paternal feeling towards all. Renounces wife to become the master of the world. Renounces kingdom to inherit the kingdom of righteousness. So it seems he did all these things with a very sincere intent, a very noble intent. Besides revealing the altruistic attitude of the Bodhisattva, this lofty aspiration discloses his disinterested effort for the amelioration of mankind. Okay, at least we finish one of the parami. So what's the time now? The next one is sila. Oh, 10:20, 10 more minutes. Okay, any question or anything you want to add? This parami actually not much use now. But when you walk the Bodhisattva way, you learn faster. But at least you listen to the Jataka story, and what the author try to explain to you through his own interpretation. Then you can compare. Anybody? Want to share anything on Dana Parami? Or do you have any question? But he didn't mention the three level of giving. You're all familiar with the three level of giving. The first level of dana is what? Giving of? Giving of what? Materialistic giving. Understand or not? It can be money, food, or whatever that is material. The second type of giving is what? The gift of? No, that one is the third one. The gift of? Life. Yun Chan is correct. The gift of life. How to give life? Heart transplant. Yeah, you donate organ before you die. The gift of life. Donate blood. The gift of life. And sometimes you make certain offering to save life. Becoming a doctor, is it gift of life? It depends what type of doctor. If the doctor go for money, you want that one. But if the doctor is really sincere, kind, compassionate, have the passion, and really very professional, then that one is gift of life. They say the hand that saves life. But the problem with doctors is they can save people's life, they cannot save their own life. Even as a surgeon, I got a classmate who tell, he's an expert in heart surgery. Even fetus heart also he can operate and safe. The newborn baby got complication at the heart. He's an expert. He's now in the United States. Last time he was trained in UK. MU student, my schoolmate from my hometown. Then he did very well. UK headhunted him, he went. Before Malaysia, after he finished his houseman, he only asked for a super skill, which that time was 3,000 over ringgit a month. With allowance, they say cannot. So he said, cannot I go UK? So UK he was paid in pound, equivalent to 20 over 1,000 ringgit. That's why he stayed there. Then he did his specialization. Then he became so good, US headhunt him. So now he is very famous. He's still working. When he came and visit us for our 60 year anniversary or whatever, he still receive a lot of WhatsApp phone call. Well, he is being contacted everywhere and every now and then. He said a lot of work to do. A lot of people need his service. But he's a very good doctor. Very good doctor. But he jokingly say, yeah lah, very good. Help people, do for people. But if I kena, I cannot do myself. So a lot of things, dentist also same. You're very good, but your own teeth, you need to look for another dentist. That's why they say, if you are lucky, you marry your spouse who is also a dentist. So you do for her, she do for you. Anybody want to share anything? The third level of dana is give or truth. Give or truth got a few ways. Not necessarily give dhamma talk, give or truth. Some of the dhamma talk not authentic one. That one also is not give or truth. Give our dhamma. That one also problem. But when you try to like help, make offering or donation to dhamma books and all those things, you also have to check. That is your duty. You don't think, oh, generosity dana, I donate, but you didn't read the content. So the content is, let's say, take people to Holland. So next time your parami, you get, because you want that type of dhamma, you promote. So you end up following that dhamma, cultivate that dhamma, also go Holland. Then after a long time only come back. So sometimes dana parami, you have to be careful. And sometimes you can even like set up the condition for people to attend dhamma class. But you make sure the speaker speaks proper dhamma. Otherwise they have to qualify themselves. They say, based on what I understand now, I think this is the dhamma or this is the truth. And then not so bad. Otherwise, you confidently go and tell people. Then if it so happens that it's not the true one, or the karmic offense is very severe, it can be severe karmic obstruction. So sometimes when you want to do all this, you have to make sure. That's why you investigate into it, find out. Then when you yourself try out, you benefited from it, and you understand that this one mesh with what the Buddha is teaching, then you sure, then you will be able to do it. So the gift of truth, not necessarily you yourself teaching. You can arise the condition for this truth to be received by others. We get to print all these transcript books, notes or material, those things. So these are for gift of truth. So that's the reason why all Kayamita will participate in this. And when I set up the Kayamita grouping, I set up this Kayamita fund with the intention to benefit Kayamitas. That's why, as per what I wrote in the website, even you got money, you want to donate to this whatever material that we come out with, to print the transcript book and the sharing of our classes. I only allow the Kayamita Fund to make the offering and buy all these things and do. If other people want to donate or what, they can participate in all the other activity, the other wholesomeness, but not the printing of all these things. If you want to do it, you have to be part of the Kayamita. Then you donate to Kayamita Fund. Then from Kayamita Fund, that money will be channeled. Then Kayamita Fund do a lot of things. That's the reason why Dana Parami is very important. And on the outset, when I was willing to come out and share after Yuchan invited me out in the year 2004, I already had all this in mind. That's why the Kayamita Fund is a very strong, like, hidden force that nobody knows. People think that, oh, just a Kayamita Fund. But they don't know the potency of that Kayamita Fund. Because it can do so many things. And it will help Kayamita to have that parami to move. And we get to rejoice in all this wholesomeness. Then a lot of people actually help out, sacrifice their time. And this is the gift of service, to help in the accomplishment of the gift of truth. So indirectly, it's also creating that parami of dana, parami of gift of truth. And all these are very wholesome. Even like Chin Hao, they are doing the video, the audio, and the website. The website want a lot of parami. And Kayamita Fund pay for the website. The yearly, what you call that? Hosting. Then also our security. So all this, Kayamita Fund only can to do, you know, the rest all cannot do. So a lot of things, when you understand, you rejoice. And rejoicing is one of the meritorious actions. Then you start to understand why the Kayamita force is so strong and why almost all Kayamita, they become so different after knowing the number. And also to remind those who are not aware, our gathering of Kayamita is the coming Sunday, very near already. So try to make it early there, because we only have 11 to 11:30 for your fellowship and interaction, to get to know people, to maybe move around. Then some of the books, especially the two new books coming out this Wednesday or Thursday, I was told by Pharmacery and Brother Tim, the printer promised them Thursday. Then you can receive your copy there. So this year is significant. Yeah, this year is the 15 years I officially came out to share. So it's our 15th anniversary. So if you can come early. I think most of us will be there by 10:30 or latest 10:40. Then if you come early, you get a seat, better table. Then the other thing is also, that place you go, you can park in the basement. Basement is very easy to park. But when you go up the ramp to turn to Puchong, please don't take the wrong lane. There is a left and a right. Follow the left. You go right, you have to go take U-turn. Like Yao Che Ho. But you keep to the left, then you can actually pass by the F1 building, then keep left to turn in and U-turn back all the way. Then when you U-turn back, the easiest is the F1 building is just in front of you. So you drive to the very end. There is a jockey parking if you want to. If you don't want, then you can drive straight past the car park, take the ticket, immediately turn right to the basement. Don't drive up now. If you drive up, there is car park only at level 5 or 6, I think. Then that one very tight. Huh? Outside lah. Outside lah, but some people nice car, they don't want to park outside there. But if you don't mind parking outside, because Sunday, I think people don't wake up so early. So you come early, definitely got a lot of car park. Either basement or outside public car park also can. But by the time you come out, your car will be very hot. Steamy hot. So come early. Then also, since 1989 until 2019, it's 30 years after my nature connect. So it's a very significant and auspicious occasion. So hopefully, you all can develop a lot of understanding. We are this year onward, especially for next year, after this 2019, we have started the book, The Path to Truth, for modern day Bodhisattva. Then, after we finish this book, Tuesday class will start the Wu Liang Yi Jing, the Sutta of Infinite or Innumerable Meaning. And this is a very beautiful sutta. That one teach you virtue, real virtue, chapter 1. And that virtue is virtue of a Bodhisattva. Very different from what this book like. That one is the authentic one. That one is from the Wu Liang Yi Jing Sutta. Yeah, better give your name. Those who want to buy, give your name to Padmasri. I think I will skip through this last chapter very fast. Because the Temparamiya, you go through this one, not much use, and you read yourself better. Then I skim through it very fast. Yeah, first paramiya is so long-winded, and a lot not correct. never mind, but because Theravada version, based on the author's understanding, they will write like that. Okay, we end. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So let us share merits, transfer merit. Akasata cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa chirang rakkhantu lokasasana itta vata chamehi sampanya sana sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya itang menyatinang hotu sukita hantu nyatayo idang menyatina hotu sukita hantu nyatayo imyang menyatina hotu sukita hantu nyatayo deo wasatu kalena sasa sampati hitu ce hito bawa tuloko ce Raja bhavatu dhammiko imina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, pay respect to Pajama, let me end. Flower garden, who's supposed to offer? Didn't offer yet.